This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Thursday. Let's check in with Dr. Richard Wolff, the economist and co-founder of Democracy at Work, the author most recently of Capitalism's Crisis Deepens, Essays on the Global Economic Meltdown, the website democracyatwork.info and rdwolff with two Fs.com. You can tweet him at Prof. Wolff, P-R-O-F-W-O-L-F-F, or at democracy at W-R-K. Professor Wolff, welcome back.
And I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. I'm sorry, I have to push a button here to get your audio the way it should be. There we go, much better. So we had David Stockman on the show earlier in the week, Reagan's old budget director who has, you know, kind of become an anti-Reagan curmudgeon. Yeah. And he pointed out that starting in on October 1st, the beginning of the 2019 fiscal year for our federal government, that's when the government is going to have to begin borrowing $1.2 trillion immediately to hand off that money to the billionaire class from the Republican tax scam, the so-called tax cuts. And at the same time that the Treasury is going to try to drop between $600 and $800 billion in treasuries, or excuse me, the Fed is going to drop $600 to $800 billion in treasuries as part of their quantitative easing unwinding process. And his concern is that this massive dumping of bonds into the market is going to drive up interest rates, which will drive down the stock market, which will create possibly even a 1929 kind of scenario. Now, that's my language, the 1929 part, not his. But actually, we ran out of time in the interview before I could ask him that question. But it sure sounded like that's what he was describing. Your thoughts on that? And what the plunge protection team's role may be in all this?
Well, there's two things I would say. One, it's a perfectly reasonable scenario. Unfortunately, it's one of several reasonably logical, if you like, scenarios of what kind of a system we're living in. That is, we're on the knife edge. We are in an economic system that's going through both long-term and short-term challenges and changes, so that any kind of disturbance, such as the one he refers to, the sudden selling of new bonds by the government and old bonds by the Federal Reserve, could depress the price of those bonds, which means the interest rates go up, and if the interest rates go up, the ability of Americans to buy cars and homes and use their credit cards becomes more expensive, and you can see how that could depress an economy that's already on the edge. I think the bigger issue lying behind what Stockman is saying is that we have an economy that really did crash in 2008 after having produced inequality on an unsustainable level. It used the government to bail out the 1%, which made the inequality worse, not better. And so we are now looking 10 years later at a 2018 economy that is extremely fragile, with wages that have done almost nothing, with a level of debt that is already higher than what the economy can sustain, and anything could be the straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back. And Mr. Stockman is simply pointing to one of those possibilities.
Clearly. And in that context, Elizabeth Warren has been sort of a one-woman truth squad on this. Bernie Sanders also speaking out about it, although the media seems very reluctant to ever put Bernie on the air, but they've been putting her on. The 17 Democrats have joined the Republicans in the Senate in moving forward legislation that would basically re-deregulate not the very biggest banks, but the banks that were the size of Countrywide Financial, which brought down the U.S. in 2008. Countrywide at its peak was a $155 billion company, and this would deregulate the companies between, I believe, $25 and $250 billion in assets, which is pretty mind-boggling, $250 billion. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. Your thoughts on that and what that could mean?
Well, I'm shocked, like I think most Americans are. Let's be clear what we're looking at. Those banks undertook risky lending, the precise thing they're not supposed to do, and did it on such a scale that they basically threw the entire global capitalist system into a major crash, the second worst crash in the history of capitalism after the 1930s. They then turn to the government to ask them to bail them out by threatening us that they were too big to allow to fail. We gave them, we the American people particularly, the tax support, the Federal Reserve monetary support. They said, thank you very much. And when we said yes, but we would also like to regulate you so you don't have this happen again, they're using the money that helped bail them out to recover their profits and now to use those profits to undo the little bit of regulation that went along with bailing them out. It kind of takes your breath away at the sheer effrontery of being determined to do that. And that the Democrats went along with it, well, you know, shame on them, shame on all of us for allowing all of this. And will it make the system more at risk? Absolutely. That's why these bills were passed, to deal with that risk.
Yeah. Wow. What's your take on what's happening in Europe right now? The Italians just had an election. Is this populist, so-called populist wave, a reaction to the breakdown of capitalism itself, or the, you know, kind of the cancer stage of it we seem to all be in, or to just broadly neoliberal? I mean, what's going on, in your opinion?
No, I think it's a very deep reflection that the old capitalist system that has been dominant in Western Europe, for example, for at least 300 years now, is in a kind of tailspin of decline, in which it can only take care of a small part of the population. Those at the top are using every device available to them, as they are here in the United States, to make sure that small part of the population is them and not the rest of us. And the reaction of the Europeans, Britain, France, Germany, and now this last week, Italy, is very clear. We're not voting for the old parties that are associated with managing that old capitalism. We don't like it. We don't like them. And we're going to turn anywhere to try to find something new and different. We'll vote to have Britain leave the Europeans. It's not the right response. It's not the right target, but it's a clear sign of how desperate they are. And the Germans would not vote for the two parties that have exchanged governing Germany for the last 40 years. The same thing in France, and the same thing in gusto in Italy this last weekend. I don't think the people have figured out where to go next, but they are voting very clearly that this existing system is behaving in a way they don't want it anymore, and that's going to shape our politics for quite a while in very troubling ways.
In the 40 seconds we have left, doesn't that mean that they could be throwing the baby of democracy out with the bathwater of neoliberalism?
That's right. They could be so angry at what the people brought to them, who kept saying democracy when what they really meant was conventional capitalist inequality, that's right, they may turn against democracy because the word has been abused and misused by people who never really had a commitment to it in the first place.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be what's happening in Turkey, what's happened in Hungary with Orban, in Turkey with Erdogan, in the direction Italy is going, the northern European countries, even the rise of right-wing parties, Germany, the challenges to Merkel, and here in the United States, the rise of Trumpism and all that kind of stuff. It's
Absolutely. Scary
stuff. Dr. Wolf, hopefully next week we can talk about solutions to all this and get back to some positive news.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Great. Dr. Richard Wolf, co-founder of Democracy at Work, democracyatwork.info, the website rdwolf with two Fs .com, also his website. You can tweet him at Prof Wolf, ProfWolff. Thank you, Dr. Wolf. We'll
thank
be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program. And welcome back. Interesting. Yeah, welcome back. James, watching Free Speech TV in Wichita, Kansas. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I want to let you know that, first of all, you know, I really respect your show. All right? I wouldn't call here with my views if I didn't, all right?
Thank you.
Well, on one side, I just heard you sit there and say we need to get back to the rule of law. about Guantanamo.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to the stuff that's going on with California, with the mayor telling everybody about ICE coming, you're okay with that. You really haven't explained yourself on the whole, the girl who got shot over there by the one guy.
What are you talking about? You talking about the whole Fox News hysteria over that illegal alien who dropped a gun on the ground
Just don't do that.
Yeah.
Just don't do that because you're responsible as a gun owner. You have to be responsible for that.
James, you have a fundamental misunderstanding of what's going on here.
You start calling me names and stuff. Don't do that. I don't like it when you call me names. I'm calling because I really want to know.
Okay, if you want to know.
And I told you I respect your show.
If you want to know, listen. Please listen. What Sanctuary Cities is all about is not what Fox News has told you. What Sanctuary Cities is all about is if somebody is in this country and they are not here legally, and let's say it's a family, right? And the woman is being beaten up by her husband. If she is afraid to report her husband for abuse because she's afraid when the police come, they're going to deport both of them, that does not help create a better society for anybody. If she's concerned that her husband is accumulating weapons and might be wanting to go shoot up a school, but she's afraid to call the police because she doesn't want to get deported, that doesn't help anybody. If she's working, or he is, or anybody who's in this country without legal documentation is working for an employer, they should not be working for an employer. I agree with that. The employers should be the ones going to jail. But if that employer is demanding sexual services from them, which is very common, or is refusing to pay them, which is very common, or is otherwise ripping them off, if they're afraid that if they go to the police or if they go to any of the authorities at all, they will be deported. If there's a number of people who are undocumented living in a neighborhood, and criminals come into that neighborhood and behave like criminals, they're afraid to call the police. None of this is good for us, James.
Can I tell you my side now?
Sure.
This is me speaking as a slave, a native black person, okay? If I take my cousin in, who's done some bad, which he did, okay, that's fine, and I take him in and I lie to the police, they charge me with obstruction. And I don't know how it is over there, but they can always call. They got the number that you stay anonymous on. They have those all over the country. Anybody can call there. And I'm part of the neighborhood watch thing or whatever you call. That's what we tell them to do. Call that 1-800 number. You are protected. Nobody has to know your identity.
But see, if you're calling because you're the victim of a crime, you need to identify yourself. And these people are afraid to identify themselves.
You don't have to do that.
All the state officials in California are saying, James, is we are not the immigration police. The immigration police can do their job. Let us do our job. We're protecting our communities.
That's all. The rule of law.
Now, James, you got to pick. Do you want the rule of law of California or the rule of law of the United States, of the federal government?
The federal government's laws are in conflict with California's laws.
They're both the rule of law. So, don't give me that. James, thanks for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Somebody over on Twitter tweeted on International Women's Day, Tom Hartman is calling out Stephanie Ruhle, dick move. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I should have waited a day, but then doesn't that mean that we're just like having this one gratuitous day? It wasn't about being a woman. I also was calling out Joe Scarborough and Ali Velshi, although I don't think I named Ali. I certainly mentioned Joe. My point was that the morning lineup on MSNBC ranges from Republican to corporate centrist Democrat, and there are very rarely any progressives to be seen. And I stand behind that, regardless of what day of the year it is. Lynn in Mobile, Alabama. Hey, Lynn, what's up?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. First of all, let me say that I worked to the point of physical exhaustion to get Doug James elected, but that what is commonly acknowledged is that it was the Democratic black women who put his campaign over the top.
You're right. The guy who was running against Roy Moore, for people who don't remember or know who you're talking about, yes.
Right. Well, anyway, I'm a union member recruiter, and I go out into schools and recently I've run into this phenomenon where numerous black male professionals who supported Hillary Clinton in the campaign, presidential campaign, told me how dismayed they were that many of their black male friends voted for Trump. And one of the explanations that was given was that they just couldn't see voting for a woman. So I've labeled this a new phenomenon called femophobia, or they are femophobic.
And it's
kind of off-putting because a lot of white men and women worked in the civil rights movement to get rights for blacks. And then a lot of black men apparently have a problem with a woman being president. You know, I'd like to know what your take is on that.
I don't know what the numbers are, Lynn. I acknowledge the role that black women played in getting Doug Jones elected, and that was extraordinary. And, you know, black women are a rising political force in America, and thank God. I haven't seen the numbers or statistics on black male support of Trump. I'm guessing it's fairly marginal, but I think in all communities, I mean, regardless of race, or frankly, regardless of class, we've got a problem with patriarchy. We've got a problem with testosterone. We've got a problem with you know, women not having full legal rights in the United States. We need the Equal Rights Amendment as a beginning point. And we need, you know, a fundamental cultural change. And I think the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement and all that stuff is starting to bring that about. And that's a whole lot better than, you know, kind of a one-day event. But anyhow, that's my take on Lynn's. Sorry.
I just thought it was, it was kind of shocking to me that in me going out to school after school after school, I ran into that commentary on numerous occasions. It's given me something to think about. And and this goes out to Rush Limbaugh. I'm a proud feminazi.
There you go. Good on you, Lynn. Lynn, thank you so much for the call. And thanks for watching us there in Mobile, Alabama. Steve in Blackburg, Virginia. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Oh, Tom, it's great to talk to you. I mean, you're one of my favorite people to even watch on TV.
No need. This is not a cabinet meeting in the Trump White House, Steve. Get right to your topic.
I'm not going to kiss too much butt, but, you know, you were talking about the right-to-work laws earlier.
Yeah. I call it right-to-work for less. Yeah.
Democrats have a very bad time with trying to find the proper vernacular.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right to unite would be a beautiful phrase, right to unite.
Yes.
I mean, we need unions.
Yeah.
We need unions to bring this country back.
Yeah, unions are democracy in the workplace. I mean, it's just that simple. They are the only democratic institutions that exist in particular in larger workplaces. I mean, some co-ops or smaller companies are run on a somewhat more collaborative basis, but in a big company, you know, it's essentially a kingdom.
Well, it was wonderful to watch you actually talk to Dr. Wolf earlier, because I really think that he is one of the more brilliant people as far as how to bring co-ops and things mm-hmm. like that into existence.
Yeah.
And we need to take our rights back.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. Steve, very, very well said. Thank you for the call. Nancy in Oaklawn, Illinois. Hey, Nancy. Last minute is yours for this half hour. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Oh, everything. I'm so frustrated, and I need to vent, and I just, I can't stand that. You know, you have so many callers who are saying exactly what we feel, you know, that we need change, and their percentages are with us, and I still don't believe that high of a percentage of women voted for Trump. I just can't believe it. I haven't trusted polls since electronic voting machines came in. But our problem is we don't have anyone fighting for us. The Democrats keep telling us that we're not out there voting and all that, but they're not out there screaming for us. They should be out there screaming.
A lot of them are, Nancy. The Congressional Progressive Caucus held two press conferences this week. Neither one even got a mention in any media anywhere. Had it been the Tea Party Caucus, they'd be all over it. But I understand what you're saying, but I'm sorry, we're out of time. But thank you for the call, and well said.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We don't just have a democracy problem or a Democratic Party problem. We also have a media problem. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I'm still hearing myself louder than anything else. There's something funky with our gain levels. Anyhow, Leslie in Central Square, New York. Hey, Leslie, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Rick Scott in Florida has two factories producing assault weapons. Where are these going? I'm assuming he's already, there must be producing thousands and thousands of them. They're probably going into the white supremacists and Nazis and stuff. That's kind of scary because we already seen what happened in South Carolina, where somebody already got murdered, and the police did nothing. I assume that the police would probably join in with them, and that's scary as hell. And what's up with Trump and the army?
Yeah, where's Leslie, what's your source thing for the two weapons manufacturing companies in Florida?
I don't know their names, but it came up when it was on TV, when he was on there, came up on there.
Okay. I don't have any details on that, so I can't speak to it. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, there's gun manufacturing companies or companies that manufacture things associated with guns, you know, bullets, gun accessories, whatever, pieces for guns all over the country.
These two plants specifically, as said, produced assault weapons.
Yeah. I'll have to look into it, Leslie. I don't know. But what I do know is that the NRA is basically the lobbying arm of the weapons industry in the United States, and they have virtually complete control over the Republican Party. And even in Florida, I was amazed this morning to see news reports saying, finally the Republican legislature in Florida took on the NRA. They took them on in that the NRA opposed raising the age to buy an assault weapon to 21 and opposed a 3-day waiting period. They did not take on the NRA in any form of gun control. They didn't, they banned bump stocks. Bump stocks aren't even guns. They're accessories you add to a gun. They did not ban any kind of guns. And that's why the kids in Parkland, Florida are saying, not what we wanted, right? This is not what we need. Thanks a lot for the call, Leslie. Ty in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ty, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm actually at the gym burning off some steam right now. Just a little mad about something. So a little bit of background. I call into your show all the time, and I have a pretty blue-collar family. My grandmother has worked in a bank her entire life. She's 75 now. My grandfather drove trucks in America for 35 years. Well, they saved up money, lost a lot of their retirement money from 2008, from the Bush years.
Right.
And my grandfather had a stroke in 2011. So he had to retire from trucking, and my grandmother had retired. They're around 75 now. And I just stopped by their house, and they're struggling so hard with medical bills that they can't even go grocery shopping, that we just had to go and sign. Well, we filled out the application and started them up for SNAP. And talking to them, they're some of the hardest working people you'll ever meet your entire life, like blue-collar Pittsburgh hardworking family.
Right.
And they're still demonized to go on food stamps because the Republicans are trying to take away their Medicare.
The Republicans are also going to want them to pee in a cup pretty soon and prove that every, three times a week they've gone out and applied for a job or done 20 hours of community service if they want food stamps.
Oh, I just can't even tell you how. And this isn't some situation like I get the school shootings, I get all these issues, these minority cultural war issues. This is happening all over America. There's people who have given their lives, hardworking lives, to America, and they're getting it stolen from the rich.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's how the Republicans sell it, by the way. The majority of Republicans believe that the majority of people on food stamps are black. And that is, that's the narrative. I mean, when there's crime stories on Fox so-called news, there's always a picture of a black person, right? When they're talking about food stamps or they're talking about welfare, they frequently use pictures of black people. I don't know if it's always, but there was a really good analysis of this done over at MediaMatters.org a couple of weeks ago. And most of the time, they show a black person. So the majority of Republican voters believe that the majority of people on welfare and on food stamps are African American. The fact of the matter is, the majority of people on both programs are white. But to hell with facts, right? And so then the Republicans take that belief and use that to get Republican support or support for Republican politicians who are going to destroy these social safety nets. And the reason that the billionaires who own the Republican Party want to destroy these social safety nets is because they don't want to pay the damn taxes to help fund them. It's real simple. And it is just morally bankrupt. It is not the American way. It is so wrong. So, Ty, I hope your grandparents...
Can I have one more comment?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
I've lived in a mix. I've been pretty successful myself in helping finance them now. And I think there's been two American dreams, and there's been a switch of it from this whole neoliberal idea that the American dream is to become rich and fabulous and become a celebrity. That's what all kids around the age want to be. I'm 24. But the real American dream is what my grandparents did. Work hard, give your country, give back to the community, and be able to live and retire well. And they're taking that away. They're taking that away to get rich and buy yachts and live this celebrity dream. And it's just wrong, man. This country's heading down the wrong direction.
Well, that's what Reagan brought us. I mean, you know, Jimmy Carter walked to his inauguration. He had an inauguration ball of the people, right? All over the city, and inauguration balls that they didn't charge for and things like that. Reagan was like, you know, you had to pay thousands of dollars to show up and dance with him and Nancy, et cetera. He recalibrated, and that was in the 80s when that show, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, came out. It was when, situation comedy shows made the shift. If you look at the situation comedies in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, whether it's, you know, Andy Griffith or whether it was Ralph Cramden or whether it was, you know, Sanford and Son, whatever it may be, they were kind of normal middle class people living a normal middle class lifestyle, which you correctly have identified as the definition of the American dream that was broadly accepted in the United States up until 1981. Then Reagan came in and said, no, the American dream is to hit the jackpot, is to be the lottery, is to be the next Steve Jobs, is to be the next Bill Gates, is to be the next billionaire. And you know, lottery ticket sales
went. Rich man in a poor country.
Say that again?
Rich man in a poor country.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it is just so wrong. Ty, thank you for the call. It's very, very well said. Walter in Dalton, Massachusetts. Hey, Walter, what's on your mind?
Hello, Tom. It's West Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. Thank you, bud. Thank you.
And it's a beautiful Norman Rockwell kind of day in the Berkshires with the beautiful snow.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, it's great. It's exquisite. My question is... I believe Mr. Trump tried to degrade or eliminate the Americans with Disabilities Act. And as a little background, I was permanently disabled before my 18th birthday. And will this have any real scary effect, even though I live in Massachusetts, which is a good state?
Yeah. I remember when that story came through, I don't recall the specifics of what the attack was on the ADA. I think that it was a deregulatory attack, that they were trying to reduce the number of companies, businesses and whatnot who had to accommodate, you know, people with disabilities, or they were reducing compliance and enforcement. The other thing, though, is that they're making it much harder to get Social Security disability, which doesn't have to do with the ADA, but peripherally does, I suppose, but, you know, not directly. But it's also badly impacting disabled people in the United States. And
well, I personally, I'm on all of it. I've got Social Security, not the disability. I was put on my mother's account.
Right.
But I've also got the heat assistance, the food stamps, and the rent assistance.
Right.
So... and all my family is gone, so I'm completely dependent on the government now, and it's pretty frightening.
As a result of your disability. Yeah, this is, you know, we really, these people who claim themselves to be Christians, right? Oh, yes, I'm a great Christian.
Yes, sir.
And Jesus said we have to care for the least of the least among us. And who is not the least of the least among us if it's not disabled people?
Amen, brother.
Yeah, except from the Republicans' point of view, they're weeds in the gene pool, or, you know, something like that. Anyhow, Walter, I need to move along, but thank you for the call. Very well said. Jessica in El Dorado, Arkansas. Jessica, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'll keep this short and sweet,
but
I've just had enough. I'm a chronic pain patient for 20 years. It's a hereditary condition. And so I was in on the beginning of the chronic pain centers opening.
Mm-hmm.
And then the DEA steps in. And I've had a cousin who killed herself because she couldn't stand the pain anymore. I've had a friend for 20 years killed himself because he couldn't stand the pain anymore. And I had a wonderful doctor who became sick and became a chronic pain doctor. And then she went under investigation, and she kept fighting them back. And a year later, she died.
Wow.
Because they wouldn't let her go.
And this is all because people are losing access to opiate medications, right?
Right.
Wow.
Nobody wants, huh?
What's your experience been? Do you still have access to painkillers?
Okay, I can't drive anymore because of the pain.
Right.
But I have to take the Medicaid van on a 12-hour trip every month to get a very little medicine. And when I do get that, I have a life.
Yeah.
And also, I have heard on Free Speech TV that the DEA has no oversight committee.
That does not surprise me. I don't know that to be a fact, but if you heard it on Free Speech, you can probably take it to the bank. Jessica, this is a real crisis. People with real pain who really need opiates are being caught up in this whole hysteric thing, and we're really not paying attention to the fentanyl coming in from China, which I think is you know a large part of the reason why so many people are dying. Jessica, thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls. And, well, we're going to check in with Talk Media News here in another 5 minutes, too. So stick around. Welcome back. Deanna, watching Free Speech TV in Lynchburg, Virginia. Hey, Deanna, what's on your mind?
I was watching about the cutbacks with the social services and stuff. My husband and I were a mixed race couple. We're white and Native American and Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm.
And we are fairly recently having to use food stamps because we had a double move this past year because of the hurricanes in Florida. Our trailer got right side. We got sent to live with relatives or refugees from that. And
my
we
goodness.
Had we're working in West Virginia and getting odd jobs, but we cannot secure regular work. And I have a doctorate degree as well as my husband and I are both soldiers. We've been out of the military for now, roughly, I've been out for almost 20 years, and he was out for about 17. He served 3, and I served 7.5. Both of our medicals are not covered for under service care because of the Obama administration.
Because they're not service-connected disabilities?
Yes, because I got my neck broken and stuff when I came home on leave to see my husband. So.
Oh, my.
Yes, I caught him with another woman, and it didn't work out.
I'm sorry to hear that, Deanna.
At least the man I'm with now is someone actually I knew from service. I had met on one of my locations.
Sure.
We were both married separately at the time, you know.
So. Yeah. So the point of your call is what?
It is very difficult to get on any assistance and stuff, especially when you're educated, because then they say you have to do this, this, and this, and I said, well, yeah, I also have severe arthritis related to those issues. And my husband smashed his arm going to work. He got in an accident, so he actually is now disabled also.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying I'm strong and I can work, but I've got to work within a certain capacity. And today's work judgments on what your criteria is to be able to work, they want to look for every reason to get you out of work, I think. You know, people don't want to hire you and things because when you run your driver's license, it registers or you have a brain injury, you know, things like that are labeled and stuck to you. Mm. You know, things that need to be taken out of the system. You know, if you've got to go to the bathroom 10 times a day, you know, it's a minor problem compared to being on social services,
right.
You know, or like the husband has pain management issues and stuff like that, but he was not afforded rehab care.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, his left arm withered and is not usable today.
Yikes. So what you're calling for, it sounds like to me, is an expansion of the social safety net.
Yes, not necessarily Obamacare. We're actually perfectly fine with a reasonable fee for service clinics, but there used to be tons around before Obama came in and did the reform. And I think there's not a one-size-fits-all solution to everybody, and that, you know, city clinics and fee-for-service clinics should never be overlooked. you know, and things.
Well, you know, Obamacare brought 10,000. Obamacare brought 10,000 clinics across the United States. That was something that Bernie Sanders insisted on to get his vote. One of my kids worked in one of them here in Portland, Oregon for years, just providing great services to people at no cost. I understand that many of those clinics have now been closed as a consequence of Donald Trump's changes to Obamacare.
I think it's somewhere where, like, you know, the evil is somewhere in between, you know, like miscommunications and stuff, because under Obamacare, when we tried to register, it was $4.99 a month for our family to register, which wouldn't be bad, except for you're only making $1,500 a month. You have a $930 house.
Yeah, this is why we need to just go to Medicare for All and just simplify things like Canada did and take care of the problem. Deanna, thank you for the call. I wish you the very best. Bob Ney is up next. We'll talk media news. Stick around. News and find out what's going on in the world today. On the line with us, oh, by the way, this the report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. On the line with us, Bob Ney with Talk Media News. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am well. I should add, the author of Sideswiped and Congressman. Always great to hear from you. What is in the news today?
Well, let's talk about Kim Jong-un a little bit. And how about the difference between ambassador, diplomat, and envoy? How about that?
Okay.
And the reason I bring that up is because I'm reading between the lines here. But the Trump administration is putting out the word that they may create a special North Korea envoy. Now, they're losing a key figure in the State Department who's been there at least over 2.5 decades, Mr. Hun, H-U-N, and I don't know who they're going to replace him with. You know, he's got years.
Well, Trump met with John Bolton yesterday.
Actually, somebody who knows how I feel about John Bolton actually brought that up to me on air today.
Yeah.
And I said, I hope he doesn't get in the White House. He'll come back after me.
Yeah.
But I am no fan, as you know, of John Bolton. That would be amazing. He, of course, would immediately want to bomb Iran and possibly Canada just in case they get out of line in 50 years from now.
Yeah, no, exactly. I saw this amazing documentary. It's not out yet. It's about the Cuban embargo. And it'll be out in a short while, and I'll let you know about it. But it's called Embargoed. But in it, Bobby Kennedy Jr., you know, the currently alive son of Robert F. Kennedy, was telling the story of how during the Cuban Missile Crisis, Goethart LeMay, General Curtis LeMay, the guy who supervised the bombing of Tokyo, advised Jack Kennedy that he should simply start a nuclear war with Russia. And when Jack said, what would that cost us in terms of human life here in the United States, General LeMay said, we're estimating 47 million American deaths. He said, but that's no problem. We will kill at least 168 million Russians. So we will win that war. And Jack Kennedy walked out of that meeting, walked into the room with Bobby Kennedy and said, this guy is nuts.
Right. General Curtis E. LeMay. I remember that name from history.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he was John Bolton, actually, Tom. He at his request in my office, and it was a horrific meeting. It didn't go well, but on top of it, very scary. I'll put it that way.
Oh, I used to debate him on this program, you know, when he was completely out of power. Yeah, he's been on the show 5 or 6 times. It's been probably a decade since that happened.
Interesting.
But he finally got, he was finally not willing to talk to me anymore. But he is the hardcore, you know, this is back when he was saying that we should blow up the top of the UN building, et cetera. Anyhow, what else is up in the news?
Well, and again, they might appoint an envoy, so it kind of shows maybe, possibly, they're going to do something with some kind of talks with North and South Korea. And the big news of the day, of course, there's several large stories today, but the one is the outright Sessions in-your-face visit to California, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done, I think, for two reasons. One, for the dramatic effect of it, of actually going there versus announcing something from D.C. And second, I think, to make the president happy. You know,
yeah, it was, well, and it was made for Fox News.
Right, and they have not had a very good relationship in the last couple of weeks, so I think the president's happy with him of, you know, what he said in California. It's to be seen. It's a big legal battle. You know, things will continue, so we'll see what happens there. I don't know if you saw the Survey Monkey yet. And I just want to bring this up because it's a political thing, but there's surveys, and there's polls and surveys, and they've done surveys on 10 Senate seats. And what they're saying in the initial survey, and I find this kind of interesting, and it's way early, of course, but they're saying that, in fact, you know, the president is doing better in certain states, 10 certain states, and some of them, of course, are red states, than he is doing on the national average, and then it kind of builds it into a hype to say that, you know, certain seats are in jeopardy. But when you take a look at it, they're saying that Joe Manchin of West Virginia is going to be a real problem, you know, for the Democratic side. And frankly, and I know some Democratic constituencies aren't happy with Senator Manchin, but in fact, in the state of West Virginia, no matter what they're saying in this survey, he most likely will beat a Republican, you know, in that state. Yeah. And it included Ohio, of course, and Sherrod Brown's in pretty good shape. So I did want to mention
although
that.
I'm on Sherrod Brown's email list, and the last couple of emails I've gotten are sounding nearly hysterical. You know, oh, my God, we're slipping. The Koch brothers are brilliant, bringing millions of dollars into the state. They haven't started yet, but it's already happening. We're slipping in the polls. You know, help us, help us. Well, it really concerns me.
Yes, I mean, you never know. Speaking of the Koch brothers, they are upset with President Trump. I don't think he cares because they never... Well, there's conspiracy theories that they kind of indirectly backed him during the primary. I don't know what to believe.
Well, if they hadn't put $800 million into the election to elect nationwide Republicans,
right.
You know, people wouldn't have shown up at the polls.
Sure.
I mean, they had a massive voter outreach, you know, get out the vote effort.
Sure.
And so those people, of course, voted for the top of the ticket. If the Koch brothers hadn't participated, Trump would not be president.
But I don't think he recognizes that. I think because they didn't get in the primary, you know how he thinks.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they didn't get in the primary, he doesn't view them as somebody he really particularly needs.
Although he used to be part of their network, you know, he used to go to their
oh, really?
Events.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Of course, he went to some of the Democratic events too. You never know what he's
yeah,
going to do.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But they are angry, and they're speaking out, and they're angry over the tariffs. So turning to the tariffs, of course, President Trump did follow through with some tariffs. He did exempt. Temporarily for the time being Mexico and Canada. I don't know what the strategy is, but that's what he did on tariffs today with the signature.
Very, very interesting. Okay, Bob Ney with Talk Media News. Thank you, Congressman. And check out Bob's book, Sideswipe, sometime if you really want to know how Washington, D.C. is working. We'll be back. America's lawyer Mike Papantonio is going to be with us in just a few minutes. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.